Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Well, then. I'm not going to say now.
Is it because I was correct to assume what I did?
No.
And that you're trying to dodge it by shaming me?
No.
Donnie, I mean, it sounds like a guilty mind over there. Sounds a little tremble,
Donnie,
in that voice.
We've got, and I love this about Donnie. We've got Donnie. Tomlin said two guys, one track. We've got Donnie with two tracks right now. We've got Donnie got to pay attention to the show, but we also have Donnie got to do his due diligence and get his ass ready for the next show, which starts in not a few minutes, but in like an hour.
Do you think it's incumbent upon us when he's producing our show on the front end of an Ernie Banks to not ask him for too many of his takes so he keeps them fresh for his own 4 hours?
Donnie?
Do you prefer to be less of an active part of the show, or do you want to get a chance to work out the kinks on them? Like
That's open
mic night and you're just trying to polish up the routine.
It's like when you hear someone perform the national anthem at a Steelers game like an hour and a half before
the
game actually starts.
Yeah, this is your sound check for your takes.
Yeah, it's not bad to get a little bit of it out there.
Just like cracking your knuckles. Maybe you glean
some probably
insights
knowing,
from our
knowing that I'm going to have.
He's probably rehearsing in his head
to work with
what he's going to say, or he's getting the stuff he needs, or he's writing things down. I mean, that's probably what I would be doing if I were in his shoes when he's in these Let's Play 2 modes. This is like the minor league doubleheader, though, because he doesn't have a full 4 hour show tonight. In the minor leagues, doubleheaders are 7 innings, they're not 9.
So the babies fly by.
So he at least knows that. That he ain't here till 10:35 when Mulsey and Richie Walsh do the sports call.
I think
tonight.
It's gonna be me and Pomp again tonight. It's a Wednesday.
I don't know about that.
Is Pomp on tomorrow with you?
No, I don't think so,
dude.
So the thing that you've said that's stuck with people is why not trade T.J. Watt if you lose this game and reality sets in again that you're not really that close.
Oh, no.
To competing for a championship.
Oh,
what?
No. I just got a text from my mom.
Yep.
Listening to the show now about 7 crying laughing emojis.
Yep. See, Mrs. Muller, I'm trying my best here to keep your kid on the straight and narrow.
That is unbelievable that is actually happening.
And he just
right
to the sex toy well.
All right. Anyway, man. Let's get back to me having a great opinion that influenced public opinion here.
You were, I think, ahead of your time a little bit on this because one of the things I heard constantly right after the game was blow it up and get this guy out of here. TJ Watt, I want to be a Steeler. Steelers fans, we don't want you. You're more valuable to us as a trade chip than you are a guy out there on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what happens is people are passionate when the game ends and they say these things. And then time goes by and the wounds start to heal up a little bit. Like, I'm guessing we'll get to the summer and we'll get to the start of the season. And I'm not going to change my mind on Tomlin, but we'll start to have people that called angrily in after the last game and said, fire him, who will just want to take the Steelers side of things and will ruthlessly defend him 4 or 5 months from now. Well, the organizational plan, Omar Khan, people like that. And I think that TJ Watt is likely to be one of those people,
too. He'll post a video like in the lab working out or something.
Yeah.
And people will be like, ready for another DPOY season. It's time. Something like that.
And I said to you before the game that I would rather keep an all-time great who I think has several more years of great production ahead of him. But the more I think about it, the better off I think they are trying to get high draft picks. Now, they got to actually hit on those picks and not take Najee Harris or Terrell Edmonds or Kenny Pickett or Broderick Jones. You know, like, you got to get the picks right, but the more of them you have, the better the odds of you getting good to great young players. It looks like Zach Frazier, even though he was picked in the second round, is going to be one of those guys. So And the other part of this is, too, that I haven't even said yet, he's going into the last year of his contract. So I'm not really, at this moment, I don't want to make him the highest paid defensive player in the NFL again. I don't want to keep up with the Joneses and, okay, this is what Nick Bosa got, so therefore I have to give TJ Watt a million or two more than that. I'm not in the mood to do that after I watched him, as Donnie likes to say, show up on a milk carton over the last month of the year.
He was invisible. I mean, he did not register a sack in their last four games, including the postseason game. He did the Tony Snell bit, the completely empty zeros stat line against a rookie tackle in Roger Rosengarten. I mean, just, you would expect him to like dominate that matchup. I was going back while you were talking here and laying this case out.
Back and forth with your mom or back and forth?
Well, she
on this
actually
topic.
Has a take on TJ Watt. Do you want to hear it? I mean, she actually has an opinion.
Trade
here.
Him straight up to the Browns for Myles Garrett?
No. Fans here want to see TJ Watt win a Super Bowl with all of his talent. He's spinning his wheels here. Strong opinion. I think she's in favor of trading him almost for the good of the player. I don't know if many of our listeners would agree with that, so to speak, but I wanted to see Von Miller's situation. He got traded midseason to the Bills from the Broncos, November 2nd, 2021. He was in the last year of, or no, he got traded from the Raiders, or the Raiders.
The Broncos to the Rams.
To then to the Bills.
I think
yeah.
It was a second and
it
third.
It was a second and a third, yeah. I was getting crossed
and
up
Nick
there.
Nick Benito got picked with one of those picks.
Right, so he was in the final year of his contract when that happened, Pony. He was set to be unrestricted free agent in 2022.
And that was for a half-season rental.
So, right. You would think, and then the Bills signed him at age 33. TJ Watt, just to do the math here for everybody, TJ Watt is younger than Von Miller was when he was traded.
And better.
And better at that point. Von Miller, TJ Watt's going to be 31 for next season,
I think
you'd
get
Pony.
At least a first.
I do think you'd get a first, and you probably, you know what? I think the difference is you probably either get a first and a third, or maybe if a team really thinks
first
that they're
second.
Close, you get a first and a second. And
I can't turn that down
I
right
make
now.
That deal, man.
Donnie, do you?
And just last coda here, Donnie, and I don't want to steal what you're probably going to say because you're a shrewd football guy. We all agree on one basic thing here, beyond the coach, beyond anything else. It is paramount to that they find a quarterback, whether this year or next, like going into next year's better-looking draft for that position. What does an extra first and second-round pick help you do at some point? Find a quarterback.
So ideally, you trade for a second this year and then a first next year?
That's what I would do, because the first next year is inherently less valuable because they're always, maybe not to the Steelers because it's in a better-looking quarterback class. But yeah, if you need to do it that way.
And that team's going to think with TJ Watt, they'll be better and the pick next year won't be as good.
Yeah, but you know what? You're looking at that first round pick in 2026 probably as a bargaining chip to move up with your current, with the other first round pick you already have.
Donnie?
I have come around on this to your side, and I didn't really think I would. I mean, this time last week, I thought that it would be kind of ridiculous to do that. But if you get
You gave him your number one deflated ball, TJ Watt, for that Ravens game. He was the guy you were the most, player-wise, upset with or disappointed with from that game.
But also, like, if you get your socks knocked off by another team with an offer, which I think a first and a second would be
socks
right
are
there,
off, baby.
Yeah, I think my socks would be coming off in that case. The other thing to consider here to note is that is one of the positions the Steelers do have a knack for actually getting right. They have Highsmith locked
up. They have Herbig.
They have Herbig as well. Yeah, neither one of those players are TJ Watt, but they at least have a pretty recent history of hitting on that position.
Donnie, neither one of those players is TJ Watt, but I will go back again, not to cut you off, but I get fired up about this. What has having TJ Watt all these years gotten them?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's
it's been fun to root for individual accolades.
They haven't won with him, so why can't they not win without him?
There are a lot of like future parallels with Paul Skeens to like TJ Watt's tenure here. You watching at times a guy who was at worst like the second or third best defensive player in all of football. You got Bupkis. Right now, we're all kind of lamenting that it feels like we're going to have the same thing happen with Paul Skeens. What has it gotten
we're
you?
We're close to the age where they've parted ways with their great edge rushers. I mean, none of them are as good as Watt. And the exception would be Harrison because he was a very late bloomer. But Greg Lloyd, Jason Gilden, Joey
also,
Porter in his early 30s was on the Dolphins.
Pony, why should it be like assumed as fact that he is going to age like more gracefully than other players or even than his own brother?
Well, his body type is different from his brother's. He doesn't have the type of chronic injuries that his brother had.
He's got a pretty severe one not that long in the past here that can always crop up again. Like, I'm not saying, yeah, his brother, I think, was built to get injured a little bit more, but you're always rolling the dice on a guy if you're going to give him big money as he's entering into his early and mid-30s, and he's playing a position that requires that much kind of physical conditioning and that much wear and tear.
5:15 on Wednesdays, 93.7thefan.com's Jeff Hathorn, it's the Hawk Report. In studio today.
Sadly, not at the South Side.
Sadly, not in Tallahassee for Pitt, Florida State tonight.
Or that.
You were on the call, though, for an historic game.
I can't believe you did that game. They were down 32.
Yeah.
And they had a 28-0. This is Pitt women's basketball. Tied a record for biggest comeback in women's hoops history. Down 32 points. Outscored SMU 28-0 in the third quarter. SMU was so bad in the second half, they lost by 13.
Yes.
They scored 10 points in the second half.
Here's the thing.
That's a fireable offense.
A couple of games prior, SMU beat Stanford.
Is Stanford good?
Highly ranked.
Not as good as...
Higher ranked.
Not as good as they've been maybe in the last couple of years, but still.
Jeff,
still Stanford.
I heard your call and obviously saw the highlights. Very cool thing to be a part of.
I have not heard the call.
Well, I just heard calls from Jeff in the game, like where he's calling Pitt slowly coming back in and then like pulling away. I did say, though, as wild as that comeback is, I think it's very funny that you could outscore a team 28-0 in the third quarter and be like, all right, we're only down three, ladies. Let's finish this thing off. Like, just as a sign of how bad it was.
You know what else is crazy? I had about 3 hours of sleep because drove back straight after the game from Baltimore.
It had to be fun to watch a Pittsburgh team
actually
deliver.
So sitting there at halftime, and it's like,
How did you feel about your calls? Your final call, your big moments.
Well, I don't know about you guys.
Final call that needed to be big.
Yeah,
because
there wasn't a big. There was no screaming Zach Austin.
We still love that one.
It was. But I do go back and listen because, I always like
Kevin Harlan told us he still does that after every game.
Like there are things about that game I wish I would have done, and I know there are times I also think, all right, the people from SMU are ticked off right now, but you got to call it down the middle.
Yeah, you can't. Well, yeah. You got to call it for your Pitt audience.
Let me ask you this. At what point in that third quarter did you say, like, this might actually happen here? Like, they outscore them 14-0 for the first half of that quarter or whatever it is. I'm like, all right, nice run here. But
exactly.
Like, at what point does it become like, holy crap?
Exactly. That's what I thought. Like, okay. And Pitt's had leads and blown them.
Yeah, so,
and you thought that might happen.
Josh Rountree, who people hear on the station, usually does Pitt women's basketball.
Wait, and he did do the radio call of that game.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
You were on ESPN Plus,
so
we
both got to call.
Because thought you subbed in for Rountree, and Rountree's been waiting for this great
streaming call,
game.
Right?
No, we both did, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Was awesome because we both done a lot of those games, and we both got to do it.
Okay. I got a text that basically said, if something's going to happen with Terrell Austin, we'll probably get that news tomorrow. Do you agree with that?
Agree. Typically, it's been that by that Thursday that we find out about coaches.
Okay. Do you think Austin is going to stick around? They're going to have to pay him to not work if they fire him. He signed an extension at this time last year.
It's like everything. With each minute, with each hour, it kind of dies down a little bit. I think he's going to stay.
Do you think that would be fair if he's the one that takes the fall for this?
I think it's Mike Tomlin's defense, so...
No. And you're not just saying that as another Sharon guy?
No.
Okay.
No, I think he is partly responsible for what's happening.
On game day, though, is Mike calling the shots at the end
Mike's
of the day?
Defense.
Okay. Well, we had Patrick Peterson tell us, like, oh, no, I only communicated with Terrell Austin.
He said the plays come in from Austin is what he said.
Yeah, right. Plays come from Austin.
But they get told to Austin
first. But
they're
set up by,
okay. Mike.
By Mike. And Mike is going to
– he's
overriding
his
side
of the game.
That's his side of the game. And that doesn't mean – listen, Terrell's made mistakes, too. When you look at communication issues, you got to go back to the defensive coordinator, position coaches, all that entire group as being a part of why that didn't change.
Is the majority opinion out there now, not just among fans, but among national reporters, that Justin Fields has a much better chance of coming back next year than Russell Wilson accurate?
I think there were a few of us that walked into Tomlin thinking it would be Russ and walked out thinking it's going to be Justin.
How much information have you gotten on the Kabali story? And Albert Breer, an Ohio State guy, has backed this up, that those two, Smith and Russell Wilson, did not exactly see eye to eye this year.
So, as you can imagine, Russ is very cognizant of anytime that any of us are around. So we didn't see any of it, but I trust Mark's reporting. And we had discussed that after the game on Saturday.
Who's we?
Mark and I.
Okay.
But I'm not going to give out information that Mark had. And I was kind of waiting for
Mark. But based on where you think Mark got that, you believe it wholeheartedly.
Listen, Mark, you may not agree with some of his takes. When Mark says something happened, he gets it from a source. That's not just him just throwing something out
there. Well, he also likes Russell Wilson, so it was surprising to sort of hear.
Yeah, he was Russell's biggest champion.
He was the biggest cheerleader.
I wonder if he's changed his mind based on this new information.
Well, of course, that matters whether or not Art's here.
He's back.
He's not getting the Jets job.
No, I don't think he is either, but okay. I just wanted to throw that out.
Go ahead, Chris.
No, keep going. Go.
Pickens, this whole thing where now there seems to be murmurs that it was not a one-time thing with the Chiefs game, and he has a penchant for being serially late to things, including practice. Is that backed up by some of the things you've heard?
Yes, although I will say I've never seen him come late onto the field other than treatment times. So I can't say that I witnessed him like lollygag out onto the field. You guys have seen the videos we've put out. I mean, when he's in practice, but that doesn't mean that he was there in time for meetings because, listen, at the times that we're in the locker rooms, rarely do we ever see him, ever. So just because we don't see him doesn't mean he's not there, so it's harder for us to gauge.
How about DeFabo by serendipity shows up late, is running late for a game, and he finds out about this because they get there at the same time?
Here's my other question.
That's nuts.
Why would you walk him through the media entrance?
Because you assume nobody's going to show up a little bit late themselves,
I guess.
Do
you not take him through the back because you don't
that's
want
a great
that camera
point by you.
To walk through the, you know, that camera
that's
that shows
just,
the
that strikes me
in.
As yeah. just carelessness. I can't even ascribe any, they wanted somebody to find out. Of course they didn't. Like, that's just careless, I think. And think anyone's going to be down
the
there.
The gate that he came through is not just media. It's like people in boxes. Mm-hmm. So if it wouldn't have been Mike, it could have been somebody who has a box that takes a picture with George.
What I don't get about it is...
Hey, George, you're late.
Probably
yeah.
I thought the night before a game...
They're at hotels,
they stay at the
they?
Same hotel.
Yes.
So
but,
how
but
is
But they
it?
Drive over separately so they can leave from the stadium to drive to their
so
home.
So he was still late, though, coming from a hotel, driving himself over.
Yes.
Essentially. Do you think that the worm has finally turned now internally and that he's going to get dealt? That they are, like, not just that he's going to get dealt, but they are motivated to make sure that that happens?
What's the offer?
A third round pick.
I don't think that's enough.
Really? I don't think they're going to get much more than that, Jeff.
Jeff, then hold on. The reason
I'm saying I don't think they'll be willing to deal him for a third.
Okay, then they have to pay him because he's just going to make their lives a living hell next
year
if he's not paid.
Unless they can convince him, listen, there are a lot of teams that are going to be interested in you, but if you half-ass your way through this season, you're going to cost yourself a ton of money, and if that would get through,
what has gotten
then
through
you're
going to
have a good year.
What's gotten through to George Pickens so far?
That's the devil's advocate of that point.
I mean, my God, he showed up late, then he dogged it on a route, and then Tomlin's only recourse was to say, horrible throw by the quarterback. It's not on the wide receiver.
One of the things I disagree with where the Steelers are at right now that they do every year is they believe they're a championship team every year. You are not going to be able to find a player at that cost that has the abilities of George Pickens. And that's why I think there's a good chance.
Did they get the real measure of his abilities this year? I'd argue no, and I'd argue some of it is his fault, not just, he played in an offense that was limited. I think George was George's own worst enemy many times.
More so at the end. I mean, the Bengals game, obviously, was...
But here's why I think that's alarming, Jeff. It's not like they were dead and buried, you know, playing out the string and the guy just lost interest. Like, if anything, that's the time where you show your real value into your team. If you get that whole dynamic at all, I'm going to ball out. We're going to win one or two of these games we otherwise shouldn't win, and they are going to have no choice but to give me huge money.
You would think that. How many times do you think Zach Azani, the wide receivers coach, has gone home and said...
How many times do you think George's teammates have gone home and been, or Pat Freiermuth and been like, how many times do I have to try to protect this guy from himself on the sideline?
Do you think Russell Wilson has a safe room where he just goes into his house and shuts the door and
just
screams?
Well, no, I've always said my running theory is there's either really, truly, he's just the most friendly guy ever, or there is a deep wellspring of rage boiling somewhere underneath.
Yeah, I don't know. Russ. I don't know what it is, but because remember, when Russ took over, all of a sudden, George, he was doing interviews with long answers. He was available. He was around. He was
I think with
happy.
Him, it's always good until it's not good. And then when it's not good, it never comes back.
And post-injury, it was like almost like he was a different dude. Not that he's been great the entire time.
Why
but
would that just change it? Why
was.
Wouldn't you be just champing at the bit to prove how badly they missed you?
I don't know.
Jeff, why did the exchange at the end of the press conference happen the way that it did with Mike on the Pickens being tardy for the game thing?
Mike is well prepared for
I know.
Everything we were going to ask.
That's why I'm stunned by it.
He had to have not been aware of what was coming there, what Mike had reported and then said on our air, DeFabo I'm talking about him being late. And then here's the sense I get, this is just my opinion, that he started talking and while words were coming out, he was spinning in his mind of how honest do I want to be here or what do I want to say about this? Do I want to say he was excused and he just threw some words out there that kind of showed that, listen, Mike saw it.
So that's another thing about this story that I'm a little bit confused by. I have not asked Mike this question. It's one thing if I get information after the fact. You let me know as a Steeler player, hey, Pickens has had an issue here. He was late for the Christmas game, and I find out about it on January 14th. Mike saw it happen on Christmas and then didn't report it until yesterday.
So I
don't understand why he wouldn't, right after the game, just check around and then report it that night.
So I don't want to speak for him, but I know he wanted to talk to other people about the significance of it. Had this happened before? Was this a pattern? You know, was it a big deal? And you
cool,
can't,
but I mean,
but after a game where you get your tails kicked by Kansas City, that's not the time.
Well, I think
converse through the room, and then they had that week. You know, that rest of that week off, and then they were getting.
Yeah, but
Jeff, I would think, though, that if he looks at his watch and he says, okay, inactives have already been announced, and oh, by the way, he's just walking in, that is a swift series of dots to connect. They didn't know where he was when they had to submit the inactives list. He's coming off of a two-week injury.
I would report he's late, and then if the team wants to come out and say, well, here are the reasons why, so be it. My worst fear in that situation would be, I don't report this, I saw this happen, somebody else gets wind of it, and then they beat me on the story that I have.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for Mike, but I think there was a, not a verification because he saw it, but a, what's the scope of this? Is this something that's happened a lot?
That's why I go back to the health thing in this
game.
And
he wanted to make it that type, like, I'm going to come out at one time and say he's been late to this, or this was just a one-off, or... You know, maybe Mike would have had a reasoning at that point.
I just don't see how there would be, and again, I don't want to criticize Mike. I just, if the timing lines up perfectly and no one's disputed it, that it was an hour and 25 minutes before, everybody that covers the NFL, most people that just watch it and follow it know 90 minutes before inactives have to be in. There's your story.
And the guy's coming back from a big hamstring injury.
The guy's coming back from an injury where you want to see him on the field warming up. Hey, how does he look? Even if you're 99% sure, you want to get nudged over the finish line there.
Now, Mike should have known at some level. I don't think an NFL head coach 2 hours before a game with all the things going through his head should be going around doing roll call. I mean, I'm sure they have somebody for that, even in a
yeah, but it gets brought
way.
To Mike's attention.
That's what I mean. Like,
George ain't here yet.
If he didn't
what do you
know
want us to do?
Right away, I mean, and maybe they knew that he was on his way or whatever. The thing I think we all would want to see is that there would be more discipline there, and that maybe that internal pressure of telling him he's not going to play.
A little bit late for that, Jeff.
Would have changed something.
Read Jeff at 937thefan.com. More Steelers season fallout with him. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, guys.
Look at you guys, already risen.
I did just do a Blue Chew read.
Again, I hope your mom's listening.
She actually is not. She's out of the car already, I found out.
First courtroom session of Judge Donnie for 2025. Our lawyer scores, our lawyer ratings are back to zero for the new year.
I don't even know if I'm going to pass the bar this year. I might be working illegally
here. I got that top dog energy, baby. for this one.
You know that top dog gets you top
I'm
dollar.
I'm going to bite. I'm not even going to argue.
They may let the clamp in me.
I'm coming for you. All right. Today's argument. Should the Steelers make Justin Fields their 2025 QB1? I will be arguing for. Malzie will be arguing against. 2 minutes, is that?
2 minutes on the clock.
Who do you want to go first here, Don?
Mr. Filippone, you may proceed.
I will. All right. We saw improvement from Justin Fields. He was 25 years old. People forget that. Joe Burrow's older. I've heard Judge in private session in council make jokes about quarterbacks in college who are closer to 30 than Justin Fields. And so in today's NFL, he's actually possibly ahead of the curve in that regard. His completion percentage was a career high, 65.8. The knock on him coming into this year was that he was careless with the football. In the six games he started, he only threw one interception. So he completely removed that from his game. If you go back and you look at rushing stats, first half of the season to the second half, much better with Fields at the helm. We know from watching Arthur Smith in Tennessee with Ryan Tannehill that that type of quarterback can succeed in his offense. And you might say, well, what did they do? They got one step away from the Super Bowl getting to an AFC championship game. And from an athleticism standpoint, I think Fields is a little bit better than Tannehill. Tannehill's no slouch. He played wide receiver in the Big 12 and quarterback. So I look at it this way. Better option than a 37-year-old quarterback who fell apart down the stretch, had the lowest EPA per dropback of any quarterback in the NFL. That's a fancy stat, Judge, for all quarterbacks who played from week 14 on till the end of the year. And I look at the pool of available players. Now, my colleague across from me is going to start to argue for other possible quarterbacks. Judge, I'm urging you, please pay that no mind. These men are not going to be up for the challenge. They're not going to be realistic. Justin Fields is the answer.
All right,
for the
stop talking. You talk too long. You went a second over. Also, our clocks might not even sync up at the same level.
Exactly, Judge.
Our clocks might be
wrong. I do understand we're having some clock issues in there.
The official clock is kept
Mike
by that
Tomlin's
man right
not
there.
The only one.
I didn't talk over his gavel.
Mr. Mueller.
You know, the definition of insanity, Judge, is doing the same thing and expecting different results. And at some point, it becomes insane, as much as you might be enamored with the top drawer athleticism of Justin Fields, to think that he is going to be anything different than what he's shown himself to be through parts of four NFL seasons. He's played in 50 games. He's started 44 of them. And there are some arguments that are compelling that are centered around the idea that Justin Fields has never been in a stable situation, has never been surrounded by the kind of coaching that he truly needs to show what he can do. There's also been a preponderance of the evidence, Judge, suggesting that even with great coaching, Justin Fields might just be who he is, a phenomenal runner of the football with a great arm who simply doesn't see it and decide he's going to throw it at a fast enough level to thrive consistently in the NFL. I won't lie to you, Judge, and I won't lie to this courtroom, and I won't try to blow sunshine where there shouldn't be any. I won't preach optimism about the crop of quarterbacks that you could go after if you're the Steelers instead of Justin Fields. What I will say is that I, like so many Steelers fans out there, am ready to see something different. I'm ready to see something off the board a little bit for this team. Whether that is taking a potentially insane flyer on Kirk Cousins, who has proved he can throw the ball if his Achilles tendons are fully healed, or whether that's even taking a flyer on Sam Darnold if he becomes available, a guy who has more draft pedigree than Justin Fields and showed more, albeit in a conducive offense this year, than Justin Fields has ever shown, I'd consider that. Or, since Arthur Smith works really well with very mobile quarterbacks, perhaps that means taking a second-round flyer on a player like Jalen Milroe from Alabama, whose running ability already exists and whose passing ability could be molded by an offensive coordinator with Arthur Smith's track record. Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Filippone, closing argument.
I'm not even talking to the people of the jury because it's only one man. It's you, the venerable trial. Judge Donnie. The man stood up here and made an argument for Kirk Cousins. The guy led the NFL in interceptions in only 14 games. He's turning 37 years old. I'm not even sure he has two functional feet. The guy's won one playoff game in his career. That's the first name he brought up. We're looking for answers, not more questions. We're not looking to make the hole deeper. We're looking to find not a old Band-Aid, not somebody who's going to come in here and give us the same mediocre results. We're looking for someone that is going to take this team out of the quagmire that it's in. And this man's first choice was Kirk Cousins. Sam Darnold is going to get between $20 and $30 million a year. I thought the point of this exercise was to find a quarterback who's not going to embarrass himself in the first round of the playoffs like Darnold did last night. I rest my case.
Mr. Mauer.
Because the first name I said was Kirk Cousins, it might confuse smaller-minded individuals that was the name I wanted the most. And while Counselor Filippone is correct to say that Cousins' feet might be in less than stellar shape, the Steelers did last roll the dice on a quarterback with historically small hands, so why should they have any objection to feet? It's not like Rex Ryan is coaching somewhere else. Counselor, please stop laughing at any kind of Rex Ryan reference. Jalen Milroe is more the type of player that I would be referring to here. The bottom line is, I really want to see, I was making a case for something different. Could be Quinn Ewers. You know what? It could be the Steelers aggressively making a move to actually trade up.
Judge, he's bringing up Quinn Ewers. I was not given a...
Texas Keith? Is Texas Keith
here?
He
did not submit Quinn Ewers into evidence.
I'm making closing arguments. I can bring up whoever I want. I need 6 extra seconds here at least. It could be an aggressive trade up a la the Chiefs trade. 18 spots up to go get Patrick Mahomes for a player like Cam Ward, who has the kind of quarterback mobility and the clean slate Mike Tomlin would covet.
In the case of Justin Fields' future, somebody go get Mari. Get me the results here. We have the results. I want Justin Fields as a Pittsburgh Steeler.
Let's go. 1-0. The guy started bringing up Cam Ward, Donnie. I mean, that's where the argument falls apart. We know these are not realistic options.
Oh, yeah. The great option is the guy who's got a career record of, what is it again, Pony? How many games has he won as a starting quarterback in the NFL?
You're right.
14 of them?
You're right, because Matthew Stafford's record in Detroit was sparkling.
14 and 30.
When he was there.
Oh, he's Matthew Stafford now.
No, you're calling out quarterback wins and losses. Why don't we bring Jimmy Garoppolo in then? He's got a pretty good record. And also, that makes sense, because you've said countless times that you would have a hard time doing a show with Jimmy Garoppolo because he's so handsome.
Matthew Stafford was 10-6 in his third year in the league, Pony.
What's his overall record in Detroit?
Oh, that's Detroit. I mean, back then, they made Chicago of present day look like a model franchise.